The Philosopher's Stone is the revelation of all truth. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, bringing you Absolute Philosopher. The Philosopher's Stone is the revelation of all truth. Is that true? Yes, it is. The Philosopher's Stone is the revelation of all truth. Now, is the Philosopher's Stone a physical object? Is the Philosopher's Stone something that people actually can touch, can see, can feel, can know? Well, yes it is, and no it isn't. The Philosopher's Stone is whatever we choose to make it. Many people have a talisman, and that talisman to them is very important. If they have that talisman, they feel they cannot lose, they cannot be hurt, they cannot have a problem. Now that's a very wonderful thing to be able to think that you cannot lose and you cannot have a problem. That a talisman would do something like that for you. Your lucky stone, your lucky rabbit's foot, your lucky anything, you know. Those are kind of nice things to have that give you the feeling of confidence in trying circumstances. Yes, that's wonderful. However, is that really true? Can these things have that magical purpose to them? And the truth is, no. And the truth is, yes. It doesn't matter what we place our confidence in. As long as we place our confidence in something, it is done unto us according to our belief. When we place our confidence into a talisman, then that is our belief. And of course, if we lose the talisman, then we think all is lost and there's no sense trying anymore. We've already lost the game, we've lost the battle, we've lost the relationship, we lost whatever it was we were going after. Now, the Philosopher's Stone has come from a little more significant background. It has been used by magicians, by the alchemists for centuries, for millennia, you might say, a time where they felt that they had a special gadget, Merlin the magician and his magic stuff. Now, this would all be sort of unnecessary discussion. This would all be sort of unnecessary references and talks if it were not that these things actually work. These things actually work and actually produce whatever they are said to produce. Now, do they produce it for everybody who has it? Basically, if people get a hold of the alchemist stone, they believe that it'll do it. And if a person gets a hold of an alchemist stone and doesn't know he has it, he may just throw it in the drawer, he may just not pay any attention to it, and he may have this magical stone there that can do all things, but he doesn't know it. So long as you don't apply it, you don't know it, it has nothing to do for you. Now, the moment you know that that's an alchemist stone, like Aladdin and his magic lamp, I mean, these are all stories that come out of magic. They come out of, what would you say, fiction. But they're really quite real. Aladdin, we are told, he found this lamp, and he began to polish it. And as he rubbed the lamp, a genie came out and said, "What is your wish, my master?" Now, Aladdin was not a fool. He realized that he had something quite nice, and he hung on to it. And whenever he wanted something, he just would rub his magic lamp, and the genie would come forth and accomplish whatever he wanted. Now, we have the present-day story of the movie with Genie in it, and her master who found the lamp in which she was, the wonderful lamp, and I guess that's just the only name for it. It's not a container, it's not anything else, but it is a lamp, and a wick comes out of one end, and you light it from the oil, and it brings light to the house. Okay, so, why is it that the genie was so independent? Well, does a genie have to be one way or another? What is a genie representative of? It's representative of our personality. Aladdin had a very a gentle personality. He had a very docile personality. And the genie sort of was his alter ego, encouraging him to do things that he had not thought of doing or had not the courage to do. Although once he decided to do something, he did it very well. This is how magic works. Magic is whatever we believe, whatever we give power to. Well, you say, well, Aladdin didn't give power to the genie gave power to him. And the Philosopher's Stone doesn't give power to the philosopher, the philosopher doesn't give power to the stone, the stone gives the power to the philosopher. Now, how does that work? Where does it come from? Well, in the universe, there is power. All the universe is a vibration of energy, and the vibration of energy is moving at various rates of speed. And the various rates of speed make things to be visible or non-visible. The denser the speed, the slower the speed, the more dense the object, the more physical it becomes. The higher the speed, the more invisible it becomes. And so when it becomes invisible, we don't see it. Now, we slow down that speed by our giving attention to it and we bring it about as something in our life. As I was working with the alchemists in Prague, Czechoslovakia, in Charles University there, I had many interesting experiences. I was there for the first International Congress of Parapsychology and Peritonology in 1972. And it was a great experience, a great experience. There were several of us who were fortunate to be chosen to go down into their laboratories, and I was one of them. And I went down into the laboratory beneath Charles University, underneath the great hall. There was a special staircase going down. And here were the workshops of the local alchemists. And they were doing wonderful and marvelous things. They were creating all sorts of fun things. They didn't have to create these things, but it was just a delight to them. It was like Saint Germain doing much the same thing. He had the caves just east of campus here, on which he was doing wonderful and marvelous activities. And he was creating things out of the mind and creating things in a physical way and just having himself a wonderful time being unlimited. And you too can be unlimited when you feel that you would like to be creative. The only difference between Saint Germain and the alchemists and yourself is they believe in themselves. They know they have a principle that works, and so they apply the principle. You have a principle, the same one that works. But do you apply the principle? Yes, you do. You say, I'm sick, and you're sick. You say, I'm poor, and you're poor. You say, I'm wealthy, and you're wealthy. Hey. Yeah, how often have you said that you're wealthy? How often have you said that you're healthy? How often have you claimed the truth about it? Now, you see, you have done this in the negative sense for so long, as we all have. And it's time for us to do it in the positive sense, to do it as a beneficial thing. The doctors will merely tell you, as I've said too many times before, the doctors will merely tell you that they can only keep you alive long enough for your body to heal itself. They take the pain and diminish it. They do all the things that are necessary to do, but the body must do the healing. Oh, it's true that different drugs have different effects and different skills have different effects, but in the last analysis, if the body does not do the healing work, some people have illnesses, hurts, sores that never heal. And they never heal because the mind has some sort of an attitude that keeps them from healing. Now, how will anyone ever know what that attitude is? Well, you might take your philosopher's stone and say, what is that attitude? I would like to get rid of it. And then the philosopher, the genie of the philosopher's stone, if there is one, would come out and would say to you, now look, if you're going to say you don't want something, the law of cause and effect takes the don't out of it and says want. So you want to have the problem. So instead of saying I don't want say something, say whatever it is you want. Say whatever is the truth about yourself. Say that you are wealthy, you are healthy, you are happy, you are filled with joy, Wherever you go, you have friends, you have relationships, you have people in your world who respect you and are devoted to you. Now, those are all good things, aren't they? Wouldn't that be the right type of thing to ask the genie, to ask the Philosopher's Stone? Wouldn't that be the right type of thing to put into motion? Oh, indeed it would. You know, the more naive, the more innocent the person is who's using the Philosopher's Stone or these magic lamps and all the other wonderful things, and who is using the principle, the simpler it seems that they have to obtain the goal. We should perhaps go to the little children and say, put forth your hand and heal this person. And the little child would say, okay. So he puts forth his hand and heals the person. How did you do that? I don't know. I just put it forth. You told me to do it, so I did it. You expected me to do it. You believed I could do it, so I did it. And that's the way it works. That's just the way it works. That innocence, that freedom, that belief. Do you think that if Jesus for 1 minute didn't believe that the healing would take place, that he would be so foolish as to reach forth and say, you're whole, you're perfect, go forth and sin no more? Would he have the guts to do something like that? No. He knew the principle. He knew how these things worked. He knew. Remember the story of King Arthur, as he was just a helper, and he had to go back and get a sword. And he saw the sword in the rock, one that only the next king of England could pull out of the rock. And in his innocence, in his gentleness, I'm going to take that sword. That's a nice sword. My master will like that sword. So he takes the sword out. And when he takes the sword out, he sees all the people staring at him. And they say, my God, you're it. You're fantastic. You're glorious. And he said, I am. What did I do? You see, the innocence is so perfect. And did he make a good king? My, yes, he did. Did he get into trouble, as most kings do, with sex and marriage and relationships? Yep. And did it sort of take the joy out of his kingdom? Yep. Now, what if he had not had those things in his kingdom, but had been one-pointed, dedicated to the operation of being the king and doing it with all of his heart, all of his soul, and all of his being? What if he would have just gone forth to be a king without being married, without having a child to follow him up? Let it happen to him like it happened. Let it happen to his kingdom like it happened to him when he came forth as the king. You see, we're so concerned about longevity. We're so concerned about heredity. We're so concerned about the line of lineage and so forth. And if we just maintain the innocence that we have when we pull the sword from the stone, if we remain with the innocence we have when we say, you're whole and perfect now. I forgot her name at the moment. She's the lady who worked with me at UCLA in the seminars there. She was from the Science of Mind, and she and her husband were active in healing work. And when she was a little girl in Russia, her mother used to say to her, go next door to Mrs. Jones' house, or Mrs. Klutchevich's house, and put your hand on her and tell her she's whole and perfect. Or go next door to Mr. So-and-so, or go to that dog in the street and say you're whole and perfect. And she would just do it. She would just do it. And as she did this, wonderful things happened. The person was healed. And she did this so innocently as a child. She didn't know what she was doing. She just did what her mother told her to do. And she was an obedient daughter. Not obedient to be submissive, but obedient to be believe that her mother knew what she was asking her to do. And she went out and she healed these people. And it's a wonderful thing. Later, she had a center in Maryland, in the Methodist Church there, and she did healing work there until she passed on sometime later. But a marvelous lady, a marvelous lady. And she had the innocence all of her life. She made a couple mistakes. She began to be a professional in the healing treatment work, and she began to teach people how to do it and giving them techniques and ways of doing it, and just instead of just saying, listen within, be at peace within yourself, find the divinity within yourself and share it. That's the real philosopher's stone. That's the real magic lantern. That's the real healing of miracle. It's just the law of cause and effect for humans. The law of cause and effect that says, whatever cause you put in motion, you will have an effect equal to it. So, we can find our philosopher's stone right in that law. We can find our magic lantern, our magic lamp, right in that stone. We can find the wonders of the world right in ourself, in our innocence. For so long as we are innocent, we will be able to do anything. So long as we are not familiar with the ways of the world and the only way it can be done, we will do miracles. But the moment we begin to think that there's only a certain way to do it, the moment we begin to think that there's only a certain way that it can be accomplished, then we have thrown ourselves off base and it cannot be done that way. Today is a good day for you and me to start looking at our own inner philosopher's stone. Look at our own inner innocence, our own inner gentleness. And as you look at the gentleness within you, as you look at that peace within you, call it forth and let it be that beautiful, absolute philosopher that you and I are. Remember, the absolute philosopher is pure innocence. The absolute philosopher is so innocent, so wonderful, that it does not judge anyone, it does not feel negative toward anyone, it doesn't claim anything unto itself, it does not need anything, it's not touched by anything. Whatever appearances it sees, it does not see them, it looks through them to the truth and to the reality. You and I can do that today in our life. For that is our gift of the Philosopher's Stone to ourselves. Have a wonderful day, and I love you, I love you, I love you.